Thank you everyone for joining today's Bhakti Sangha conference call. Today we are really fortunate to have His Grace Radhika Valla Prabhuji to enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam from verse 5.18.22 onwards. Before I hand over the call to Prabhuji, I would like to hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji to give a brief introduction on Prabhuji. Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Hare Krishna dear devotees, please accept my humble obeisances, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. His Grace Radhika Valla Prabhuji is a disciple of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. Prabhuji completed B.Tech and M.Tech from IIT Mumbai in 2001, and then he worked in IT for 2 years. However, his heart became attracted to Krishna consciousness, and since 2003, he has been serving in the Brahmachari Ashram of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. He has served in the Sikh Devotee Care and Deity Department. He has also served in the Education Department since 2013 and does youth preaching and congregation preaching as well. Prabhuji is a teacher of Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav, and he has been teaching in Bhakti Vedanta Vidyapit, Govardhan Eco Village in Wada, Mumbai. Hare Krishna. Welcome to the call, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much for that brief introduction. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept all of our humble obeisances. Thank you, Prabhuji, for giving your valuable time and association in this Bhakti Sangha conference call. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, you can please take over the call.
Hare Krishna. Can you hear me? Hare.
Yes, we can hear.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayet Nashtaprayeshva Bhatreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatir Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nandagopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha Oma Jnanat Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Nuvaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So today we are reading from 5th Canto, chapter 18, verse number 22. मत्प्राप्तये जेष सुरासुरादयस् तप्यन्त उग्रं तप ऐन्द्रिये धियः ऋते भवत्पादपरायणान् नमाम् विन्दन्त्यहं त्वत्कृदयायतोजित. वट् युवर् ट्रान्स्लेशन् मत्प्राप्तये. To obtain my mercy, Aja, Lord Brahma, Isha, Lord Shiva, Sura, the other devatas headed by King Indra, Chandra and Varuna, Asura, Adayaha, as well as the demons, Tapyante, undergo, Ugram, severe, Tapaha, austerity, Aindriye, Diyaha, whose minds are absorbed in thoughts of superior sense gratification, Rite, unless Bhavat Pada Parayanat, one who is wholly and solely engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, Na, not Mam, me, Vindanti, obtain, Aham, I, Twat, in you, Hridaya, whose hearts, Yataha, therefore, Ajita, unconquerable one. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. O Supreme Unconquerable Lord, when they become absorbed in thoughts of material enjoyment, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as well as other devatas and demons, undergo severe penances and austerities to receive my benedictions. But I do not favor anyone, however great he may be, unless he is always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Because I always keep you within my heart, I cannot favor anyone but your devotee. Purport. In this verse, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, clearly states that she does not bestow her favor on any materialistic person. Although sometimes a materialist becomes very opulent in the eyes of another materialist, such opulence is bestowed upon him by the goddess Durga Devi, a material expansion of the goddess of fortune, not by Lakshmi Devi herself. Those who desire material wealth, worship Durga Devi with the following mantra. Dhanam dehi rupam dehi rupavati bharyam dehi. O worshipable Mother Durga Devi, please give me wealth, strength, fame, a good wife and so on. By pleasing Goddess Durga, one can obtain such benefits, but since they are temporary, they result only in maya sukha. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, maya sukhaya baram udvahato vimodam. Those who work very hard for material benefits are vimodas, foolish rascals, because such happiness will not endure. On the other hand, devotees like Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj achieved extraordinary material opulences, but such opulences were not maya sukha. When a devotee acquires unparalleled opulences, they are the direct gifts of the goddess of fortune, who resides in the heart of Narayan. The material opulences a person obtains by offering prayers to the goddess Durga are temporary. As described in Bhagavad Gita, Antavattu phalam tesha tadbhavat yalpa medasa. Men of meager intelligence desire temporary happiness. We have actually seen that one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to enjoy the property of his spiritual master. And the spiritual master, being merciful towards him, gave him the temporary property, but not the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. That special mercy of the power to preach is given to a devotee who does not want anything material from his spiritual master, wants only to serve him. The story of the demon Ravana illustrates this point. Although Ravana tried to abduct the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, from the custody of Lord Ramachandra, he could not possibly do so. The Sita Devi he forcibly took with him was not the original Sita Devi, but an expansion of Maya or Durga Devi. As a result, instead of winning the favor of the real goddess of fortune, Ravana and his whole family were vanquished by the power of Durga Devi. Srishti Sthiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Rekha. Hare Krishna. So today we are reading from the prayers offered by the different residents of Jambudvipa. In Jambudvipa, there are various tracts of land, starting with Ilavrata Varsha, Hari Varsha, Uttama Kuru Varsha, Bharat Varsha, different tracts of land are there. And in each tract of land, the Lord is there in different forms, and they are worshipped by those residents. And in each tract of land, there is a particular leader of those residents. That particular leader is offering certain prayers in glorification of that deity, who is there in that particular. So in Ilavrata Varsha, Lord Shiva offered us a very beautiful prayers to Sankarshan. In Hari Varsha, Prahlad Maharaj offered prayers to the deity of Narsingadev. I think the current series of prayers are the prayers offered in the Ramyaka Varsha, in which Lakshmi Devi, the leader who is representing the residents, she is offering prayers to the transcendental Cupid. The transcendental Cupid form of the Lord. So here, Lakshmi Devi is saying that Mat praptaye ajesha sura asuradayas tapyanta ugram tapa aindriye diyaha. Diyaha, mind. Aindriye refers to, so indriya means the senses, aindriya refers to the sense objects. So aindriye diyaha means with mind absorbed or focused on sense objects. Is like mind filled with the desire to enjoy sense objects. With that intent, Aja refers to Brahma, Isha, Lord Shiva, Sura, Asura, Adaya. Brahma, Shiva, and the different devatas, what do they do? Tapyante ugram tapaha. They perform austerities. What kind of austerities? Severe austerities. They perform severe austerities. Tapyante ugram tapaha. For what purpose? Mat praptaye. To attain me. To attain me, Lakshmi. That means that they perform severe austerities to attain my favor, to attain wealth. But then third and fourth line she says, Rite bhavat pada parayanan Namam Vindanti. So do they attain my favor? Namam Vindanti. They do not attain me. So why they do not attain me? Rite Bhavat Pada Parayanan. Because unless they surrender to Bhavat Pada, Bhavat means your, unless they surrender to your lotus feet, they do not attain me. Unless they surrender to your lotus feet, they do not attain me. And why I don't actually, they do not attain me because because of they not surrendering to your lotus feet? So Ajita. So Ajita is the Sambodhara. She is addressing the Lord as Ajita, O unconquerable Lord. She is addressing like that. So Aham Tvat Hridaya. Because I always meditate on you. Because I always meditate on you. So therefore, I favor only those people who meditate on you or who are your devotees. So that's how Lakshmi Devi is very clearly saying, because most people in this world, they seek the favor of Lakshmi Devi. They seek some wealth. They worship Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Puja is very famous. And but here Lakshmi Devi is telling Bhagavatam, actually. Lakshmi Devi says that only those who are your devotees, actually, I give my favor. So even if they are like Brahma or Shiva or other devatas, even though they may perform severe austerities, but if they are not your devotees, then they cannot attain me, because I always think of your lotus feet. That is the sum and substance of this verse. So, but then we find there are people who are wealthy, but they are not devotees of the Lord. Then how do they get that wealth? If the Lakshmi Devi is not favoring, then how do they actually get wealth when they are not devotees? So they get their wealth. Their wealth is actually bestowed upon by the Durga Devi, who is the expansion of Lakshmi Devi. It is bestowed upon by the external energy of the Lord, Durga Devi. And even though they get wealth from Durga Devi, that wealth is actually temporary. It cannot remain with them for, it cannot remain with them for a long time. It is temporary. And secondly, the wealth, we also see devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, they get a lot of wealth. So the wealth obtained by them, that is not coming from the external energy of the Lord Durga Devi. Rather, they get their wealth from the internal energy of the Lord Lakshmi Devi. So sometimes we see certain people getting their wealth as a result of their karma given by Durga Devi, which is actually temporary. And there are other devotees who may be getting their wealth. It may appear that, okay, they are also getting their wealth by their karma. But Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, these, they are all pure devotees. They don't have karma. It appears externally that they also get their wealth by their karma. It's like, for example, the real silk and the burnt silk, they may look alike. But when you touch the burnt silk, it will just crumble to pieces. The real snake and the dummy snake from the snake tablet, childhood we used during Deepavali, we used to like light the snake tablet, and from that the snake would come. The real snake and the dummy snake, they may appear to be same. But when you touch the dummy snake, it just crumbles and it becomes ashes. So similarly, the wealth obtained by the general non-devotees and the wealth obtained by the pure devotees, they may appear to be same. But they are actually different. One is coming simply from their karma. One is bestowed upon by the Durga Devi, external energy of the Lord. And this will be temporary. And the other wealth is actually coming not as a result of their karma, but as a result of their devotional service, and it is bestowed upon by the transcendental goddess of fortune. And there's one purport in the 8th canto where Prabhupada says, the wealth of the devotees, which is bestowed upon by the transcendental goddess of Arjuna, is eternal. Is eternal, like that he says. So that is the difference between the wealth seen with persons who are not devotees versus the wealth seen with persons who are devotees. And so Lakshmi Devi says that the reason why I do not give the best of wealth upon them is that because I am constantly meditating upon your lotus feet. Therefore, those who are not devotees, I don't bestow wealth. So, for example, Ravana. Ravana had so much of wealth. And even when Ravana kidnapped Sita, Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita. Ravana could not touch the real Sita. Once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went on South Indian tour, when he came to Madurai, he came to the house of one Brahmana, invited him for a prasadam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came at the right time for honoring prasadam, the noon time. And that Brahmana told that about when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, that he could not see any symptom that prasadam has been cooked or prasadam is ready, because there were no activities in the kitchen. He couldn't see that the house was kept clean, as it was being ready for actually serving prasadam. On the other hand, the person who invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was actually looking very morose. And he was in a morose state. He was just sitting and lying down in the house. And Mahaprabhu became concerned. And he asked that Brahmana that, why are you in a sad state of mind? What happened to you? So he said that I was reading Ramayana. When I came to know that Sita had been kidnapped by Ravana, and after hearing that, I have come to a very sad state of mind. That how can Sita Devi be touched by this demon Ravana? This is giving me so much of pain in my heart that I am not able to do anything. I have practically become inactive. Like that, this Brahmana said. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was so happy with this Brahmana's absorption in Ramayana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said because this person not simply was reading Ramayana, he actually absorbed in that Leela, and he is actually feeling for the safety of Sita, that he is feeling bad that Ravana touched Sita and kidnapped her. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to remove his distress, Mahaprabhu told that actually Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita. Ravana can never touch the real genuine Sita, the transcendental goddess of fortune. And then he tried to explain the story that how Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita. And after the war with Lord Ram, when Ravana was killed, and then when there was a Agni Pariksha, at that time when Sita entered the fire, so the Maya Sita entered the fire and the real Sita was given by the fire god, and the real Sita came out of the fire. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that way, he tried to speak, and then he convinced convinced him to come out of his morose state of consciousness. Then that Brahmana started cooking for Mahaprabhu, and then after some hours, Mahaprabhu honored prasadam. And from there, Mahaprabhu went to Rameshwaram from Madurai. And when he went to Rameshwaram, in the temple of Rameshwaram, he saw that some Brahmanas were reciting Kurma Puran. I guess Kurma Puran, I'm not sure. Kurma Puran. And in that, there was a Shastric evidence for how Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita and not the real Sita. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the Brahmanas and he requested the Brahmanas to make a copy of that Kurma Puran, and he requested them to give the original manuscript of Kurma Puran. He told that you please copy and keep the copy with you, and please give me the original manuscript. And then he took the original manuscript, and from Rameshwaram, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was supposed to go in a different direction, but he changed his route and he came back to Madurai, and then he actually showed the verses from the Kurma Puran that Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita and not the real Sita. And then the Brahmana became very happy. And then Mahaprabhu also gave him, revealed his real position to that Brahmana. So here we see, Prabhupada is quoting that Ravana kidnapped only the Maya Sita and the purport. But in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he convinced him through logic. But later he also convinced him by quoting from the Shastra. So he could have just said that I am saying like that, I myself is Ram, I myself previously appeared as Ram and Krishna. I am saying this, I am the proof. But Mahaprabhu wanted to convince that Brahmana through the Shastra, not simply through his own position. So this is also important. Like, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Rishibir Bahudha Gitam Chandobir Vidai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padaish Chaiva Hetu Madbir Vinishchitai. Krishna says that if you want to know Vedanta Sutra in great detail, if you want to know this subject of Kshetra, Kshetrajna, etc. in detail, then you must study Vedanta Sutra in which the subject matters described in detail. So Krishna, whenever there's an opportunity, he says that, oh, this is mentioned in the Shastra. According to the Shastra, there are five factors of action. Sankhye panchaitani mahabaho karanani nibodhame. Sankhye kritante praptani siddhaye sarvakarmanam. So he quotes the Shastras. Nasato vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. Upayorapi drishtontas tvanayos tattva darshibihi. According to the seers of the truth, they have concluded that the body is temporary and the soul is eternal. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to convince this Brahmana on the basis of the scriptural authority, and for that sake, he changed his route and came back to Madurai. Because it is a very big decision actually. Because actually Mahaprabhu was going walking, but he came back to Madurai. And this also shows actually how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is concerned that a particular devotee's doubt is removed thoroughly. Of course, this devotee is actually, he was having that he was in that state of mind because of his transcendental attachment to Sita Devi. But Mahaprabhu proved like that Ravana did not touch real Sita, only Maya Sita, personally and also through Shastra, by citing the Shastra. So we see that sometimes when a person is having a doubt, or when suppose a person is creating some doubt among the, say, group of people or community of people. So how do we deal with the doubt is that we have to directly face the person who is having the doubt, bring the person who has created the doubt and the person who has got the doubt. We should give the courage to the person who has got the doubt to ask questions. Sometimes the people are afraid to ask questions because they feel that, oh, what if I raise this particular question to this particular leader? What will they think of me? Sometimes there could be some certain sensitive, controversial questions. What will they think of me? So some people are reluctant, they don't have the courage, or if I ask question, maybe I may be considered as a rebel, or I may be considered as insubmissive. Sometimes people fear that. So one of the duty of a leader is that give the courage to the person to ask questions. You create an atmosphere in such a way that people ask questions, but in the right culture, following the right culture. Suppose if there is an atmosphere where people are afraid to ask questions, that is a little, that means that atmosphere has some kind of authoritarian, or there could be some element to some extent or other, there could be some dictatorial approach from the top. So therefore, it is important from the point of view of the leader to create an atmosphere where people are not afraid to ask questions about even the decisions of the leader. That is a very healthy sign of a community. In the 10th canto, 89 chapter, the episode of in the Dwaraka, there was a Brahmana whose son died as soon as the child was born. And that Brahmana, he comes to the court of Ugrasena, and then he actually chastises Ugrasena. He says that you are responsible for the death of my son. You are not performing your Kshatriya responsibility properly, and therefore my son has died. In fact, he uses very heavy words. He says that you Kshatriyas, because you are not able to protect the citizens, therefore you are like a eunuchs, or you are uncontrolled senses. Because for a Kshatriya, in the Yaksha Prashna, there are 124 questions asked by Yaksha to Yudhishthira Maharaj. One of the, four questions are related to Kshatriyas. In that he asked that what is the Manushyatva of a Kshatriya? And what is that, what is the bad quality in a Kshatriya? He says Manushyatva, Yudhishthira answers, Manushyatva or a humanness of a Kshatriya is that when the Kshatriya becomes afraid. That means that is the Manushyatva of the Kshatriya. The Devatva of the Kshatriya is the Kshatriya possessing great weapons and missiles. But when he becomes afraid, that is considered the Manushyatva. And when the Kshatriya fails to give protection to those who surrendered, that is the bad quality in a Kshatriya. So this Brahmana, he says that we citizens have taken shelter of you, accepted you as the king, but you have not protected my son. Therefore, I consider that this is your bad quality, and he chastises Ugrasena. Like you are uncontrolled senses, you are not fit to be the king. So anyway, this is a side point that, but the point we can see is that when such a person questions the topmost authority, sometimes, especially if we see in the Kali Yuga context, there are different, say, ministers, chief ministers or presidents or something like that. And some people actually question that topmost authority. Generally, we find that they use the power to actually suppress such a voice. But here, this Brahmana, he could speak such strong words after the death of every son. 10 times he came and spoke after the death of each of his sons. Each of his child. The Ugrasena, is it that Ugrasena did not have power because of that he tried to suppress that Brahmana's voice? No, Ugrasena, it is described in the 10th canto, Ugrasena had something like 10 billion bodyguards. I'm not remembering the exact number, it is in billions or trillions, something like that. He had so many. That's a very powerful king having billions of bodyguards. But so after the first when the Brahmana spoke such strong words about the character of Ugrasena, he could have used his power to suppress that Brahmana. He had so much of power, but he did not use that power to suppress. He did not use that power to suppress. So that was the, because extent of freedom of speech given to the Brahmanas, or the freedom given to the Brahmanas in Dwaraka. Nowadays, people, some unqualified people or something like that, they demand freedom of speech, but for a wrong purpose, to create divisiveness, to create some wrong propaganda. That's a separate thing. And so the point is that Dwaraka was such a place that the atmosphere was such that even an ordinary Brahmana, poor Brahmana, could speak his heart out. Even in that, he actually chastised the king. And 10 times no power was actually exerted upon that Brahmana. So similarly, suppose when there is an atmosphere where people are not afraid to ask questions, even to the topmost authority, that is a healthy atmosphere. Sometimes when people have doubts or this one, instead of giving confidence to that person, courage that person to make that person ask the doubt to the relevant person, we may try to suppress that doubt. That will not work in the long run. Like suppose somebody has passed a stool in his dress itself, and then the bad smell starts spreading in that particular the room in which he is sitting. There are other people also sitting in the room. The bad smell starts spreading in the vehicle he's sitting, others also start smelling that. So what should we do with that? We should take that person to the bathroom so that he can change his clothes and he can take bath, and then we can bring him back. That is the ideal solution. But instead, maybe you feel the bathroom is far away or there is no water. Instead of that, if you just give some perfume to put him, you just keep putting this perfume all over you so that people stop feeling your bad smell. That is a very patchwork solution. You are not addressing the root cause of that bad smell. Similarly, sometimes certain people's certain ideas have created doubts in somebody. So then how do we deal with that? You actually give that, encourage that person to ask that doubt and get the doubts removed. But instead of that, suppose we just dismantle that, say, particular group, or could be some WhatsApp group or something like that. It is like putting perfume on the, telling the person to keep putting perfume. You have never actually addressed the root cause of that bad smell. So, here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, coming to the bank past time here. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to deal, of course, that Brahmana, he was in a transcendental state of moroseness. But still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to give thorough knowledge to that Brahmana that Sita cannot be, the real Sita cannot be touched by Ravana. Therefore, he wanted to thoroughly remove that doubt. Therefore, he changed his course and brought that original copy of Kurma Puran and showed the verses from the Kurma Puran and convinced that Brahmana. So, therefore, in fact, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, when he was explaining the story, once when we went on a South Indian Yatra, and then in Rameshwaram temple, he was giving a class, he was narrating the story, and then he said that he went to meet one of the professor, forget the name, who interacted with Srila Prabhupada in the very initial days of Prabhupada coming to America. And when Prabhupada came to America, he just brought a trunk full of books, the first three volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. So one of that very first professor whom Prabhupada met, Prabhupada gave those very first copies of the Srimad Bhagavatam with a handwritten signature to that particular professor. So when Maharaj met that professor, he came to know that this professor is having that original copy of the vintage edition of the Bhagavatam. Then Maharaj said that following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who took the original Kurma Puran copy and told those Brahmanas to make a copy for themselves. So similarly, I also followed in the same footsteps. I actually gave a brand new entire Srimad Bhagavatam set containing 18 volumes to that professor. And I requested that professor, please give me in exchange that old vintage first three volumes of the first canto Bhagavatam, that original edition. And then Maharaj said, in this way, we also followed in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu. So here, this example is given, the purport. And also, another example Prabhupada gives. Suppose when a disciple has a material desire and he approaches the spiritual master. Suppose he wants to get the property of the spiritual master. The spiritual master, he may give the property to that person. He may give the property to the disciple. But the real empowerment to preach Krishna consciousness, spread Krishna consciousness, which is the that empowerment will be awarded only to the very sincere disciple who does not have any ulterior motivation. So the real empowerment to spread Krishna consciousness, that empowerment comes from the spiritual Shakti, from the Antaranga Shakti. And that empowerment will be given to the devotee only when the spiritual master sees that the disciple does not have any ulterior motivations. And this is another point which Prabhupada gives in the purport. And so when we see Dhruva Maharaj, for example, say Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, so these pure devotees, they also get wealth. But that wealth is coming from the spiritual Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. I mentioned that the wealth bestowed by the transcendental goddess of fortune is eternal. But another place Prabhupada says, in the first canto, 15th chapter, when Arjuna was defeated by some infidel cowherd man, the purport Prabhupada explains that if the power and empowerment were bestowed upon Arjuna, power was bestowed upon Arjuna for executing the mission of Krishna. But the mission of Krishna has been accomplished, that is, relieving the burden of the earth. And therefore, that power was withdrawn from Arjuna. So if the power can be withdrawn even from a pure devotee like Arjuna, then what to speak of us? So therefore, any power and opulence which we have, that should be just utilized in the service of Krishna. That is the best way to utilize those powers. And instead of becoming proud of the borrowed powers, one should utilize those powers in the mission of the Supreme Lord. I just wish to speak just few words about Nityananda Prabhu, Nityananda Trayadoshi was yesterday. and then I'll end. So talking about Nityananda Prabhu, Nityananda Prabhu's, in the importance of faith in Nityananda Prabhu, that is actually exhibited by so many people in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is very crucial for one's advancement. And for the first example is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. When the associate of Nityananda Prabhu, Meenaketan Ramdas, when he came to Kaviraj Goswami's house and he would perform some kirtan. So Meenaketan Ramdas, being the associate of Nityananda Prabhu, in the transcendental state of madness, he would behave in a little abnormal way. In the sense that sometimes he would climb on people who are offering obeisances, he would shout to Nityananda. So there was a pujari, Gunarnava Mishra. He saw Meenaketan Ramdas, but he did not offer obeisances. So Meenaketan Ramdas said that, oh, here is a second Romaharshan Sutta. So then Kaviraj Goswami could understand that his brother has faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he has only a glimmer of a faith in Nityananda Prabhu. He has only a shadow, dim faith in Nityananda Prabhu. He told his brother that it is not appropriate that you are not having faith in Nityananda Prabhu. It is better to be an atheist instead of having, not actually putting faith on both. It's better to be an atheist instead of putting faith on one person and not the other. Because these two brothers are one soul but in two bodies. So he said that not having faith in Nityananda Prabhu is like a half-hand logic. Bhaktisiddhanta Rasavi Thakur, in his Upakhyani Upadesh, he tells a story of a man who wanted to sell his hen. And he thought that if he advertises this hen as a old hen, he would get a good price in the market. So he advertised it as a old hen, but nobody was willing to give a good price for that old hen. So after many days of trying, he consulted somebody and his friend said that you should advertise this hen as a young hen. Then people will give a good price to you. Then he was feeling that for so long I had been advertising this hen as a old hen. How can I suddenly change my words to say that, oh, this is a young hen? Then instead of saying it as a young hen, he decided to say that, oh, it is a half old, half young hen. That is like a half hen logic. This is one way of half hen logic, but it's another half hen story. A hen which was laying golden eggs. A person wanted to cut off the head portion of the hen. That's another point. But this is also a half hen logic story. So this person, how can the hen be both half old, half young? This is simply pure speculation. So people could understand the speculation and nobody was coming forward to buy. So similarly, sometimes in the spiritual field also, a person has a speculated idea. Because of the speculated idea, one may have faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu but not in Nityananda Prabhu. Or vice versa, one may have faith in Krishna but not Balaram. One may have faith in Krishna, but not in the spiritual master. One may have faith in Krishna, but not in the devotees, or vice versa. Or one may have faith in the spiritual master, but not in the devotees. Or one may have faith in Srila Prabhupada, but one may say that, oh, all the disciples of Prabhupada, they are all fallen. I will accept only Prabhupada as the guru or not and any of the disciples as the guru. Or one may have faith in the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth, but does not accept that the personality, there is a personal aspect who has got potencies. So all these are different speculated ideas. They are all coming from the half-hen logic, accepting only half the truth. It is better to not accept the complete truth. It is better to be it, instead of accepting only half the truth, it is better to be not accept any truth at all. Like even for example, even for sometimes when you're preaching or teaching somebody, some people, they know some scriptures, but they have wrong idea. They may have some scriptures, they may have some background of learning something. It becomes more difficult to convince those people than those who have a clean slate. Those who have a clean slate, sometimes it is easier to preach to them. But there are people who are religious, who have actually studied scriptures also, but they have wrong ideas, to preach with them is more difficult. I was just discussing with one of the colleagues in some Sanskrit course. So there was a discussion about what is the purpose of learning Sanskrit Vyakarana, Sanskrit grammar. So I had mentioned that the purpose of learning Vyakarana is that Vyakarana is a tool in order to study the Vedas, Vedic literatures. In fact, Vyakarana, technically, it comes under one of the Vedangas. There are six Vedangas, Shiksha, Vyakarana, Chandas, Nirukta, Jyotisha, and Kalpa. So just like an anga of the body, the part of the body is supposed to serve the whole. Similarly, the six Vedangas are supposed to serve the Veda Purusha. They will help one to understand the Vedic statements. Suppose if you take out the anga of a body separately from the body, then it is of no use separately. It has no independent identity. If you take the hand separately, cut off the hand from the body, if you keep the hand separately, or if you cut off the mouth from the body, if you keep it separately, it has no use independent. There's no use independent. The whole purpose is to serve the whole body. So therefore, I mentioned that Vedanga, Vyakaran is part of the Vedanga, but then I just gave simple logic. That, so Vyakarana, it is said in one place that one of the greatest tapasya in human life is to study Sanskrit Vyakarana. Like that one scholar, Bhartruhari, says. So when a person is performing such tapasya, so the purpose of tapasya becomes very crucial because one is working hard. The purpose of tapasya is to study the Vedic literatures with the tool of Vyakarana so that we can understand the message of the Vedas and then apply in our life. But then the person is saying, no, actually the Vyakarana has an independent identity separate from the Vedas. By making Vyakarana only as a tool, one is actually downplaying the usage of the Vyakarana. Like that, it is like saying that Vyakarana has an independent identity. It is a wrong idea, because just like the different Devatas, they are all limbs of the Supreme Lord. But if you say that the Devatas are independent of the Supreme Lord, so that means there's a definitely a wrong idea. That is a mistake. And that is what Krishna condemns in the Gita about the Devata worship. Even in the holy names, we see that to consider the Devatas to be equal to or independent of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Independent of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, that is an offense to the holy name. So similarly, even the different Vedangas are, when you consider them as independent of the Vedas, that is a mistake actually. So I was giving different logic and reasoning and different shlokas, pramana. But one was not actually ready to accept it at all. Although the person is learned, I felt that it is easy to convince a person who has no knowledge of Vyakarana that Vyakarana is a tool. It is easy to convince a person who has no knowledge of the scriptures, this Vyakarana is a tool to understand the Shastra. But I felt that this person has so much of knowledge, but to convince this simple truth, it is becoming so difficult, even after so much of logic and pramana, it becomes so difficult. So that is why sometimes it is said that, as I mentioned, it's easier to preach to somebody with a clean slate than with people who have some half-baked knowledge, actually. So therefore, Kaviraj Goswami said that it is better to be an atheist. It is better to be an atheist instead of actually believing in one and not accepting the other. So half knowing only half the truth is more dangerous than having no truth, than knowing no truth. So in this way, Kaviraj Goswami chastised his brother. And then this incident shows Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's faith in Nityananda Prabhu. And that day night, Nityananda Prabhu came in his dream and then told Kaviraj Goswami to go to Vrindavan. This is the first example of Kaviraj Goswami's faith in Nityananda Prabhu. And another example, we see Srivas Thakur's faith in Nityananda Prabhu. Once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Srivas Thakur that Nityananda Prabhu is staying in your house, you are maintaining him, but you don't know his background, you don't know his caste, from which background he is coming from, and are you not afraid that the society will start speaking ill of you because you are maintaining somebody whose background is not known? Because you know that Nityananda Prabhu, he came to Navadvip from nowhere and then he joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu was from a different place, from Eka Chakra. And then Nityananda Prabhu became part of the Association of Devotees. So nobody knew the background of Nityananda Prabhu. Mahaprabhu asked Srivas Thakur this question. And Srivas Thakur said that even if Nityananda Prabhu were to have the bottle of wine in his hand, even if Nityananda Prabhu were to associate with the prostitutes, even then I would not actually doubt Nityananda Prabhu even little bit. My faith in Nityananda Prabhu would not change even little bit. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this level of conviction, so generally you see faith in somebody, faith in a person, when the person's speech is consistent with his actions, then our faith gets strengthened. And when somebody's actions are inconsistent with the person's speech or with the person's background, then we start getting doubt. But here Srivas Thakur's complete trust in Nityananda Prabhu, he says that even if his actions appear to be very low class, associating with the prostitutes or having a wine, even then my faith would not change even little bit. This is what it means to have complete trust. Prithu Maharaj exhibits such complete trust in the Bhagavatam in his prayer to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu asked that Varamcha Matkan Chanamana Vendra Vrinishva Teham Gunashila Yantritai Naham Makairvai Sulabastapobir Yogena Vaya Samachitta Varti. I am so pleased by your wonderful behavior that I am ready to give any benediction you want. Please ask what benediction you want. And in response, Prithu Maharaj starts offering his prayers. And the conclusion of his prayer is that, my dear Lord, you are like my father. You know what is best for me. And you decide whatever is best for me. And then you can give that. You don't even have to ask my approval. Oh, I have decided to give this benediction. Is it okay from your side? You don't even have to ask my approval because I have complete trust in you. So this is the... Similarly, Srivas Thakur is showing complete trust in Nityananda Prabhu. And when Mahaprabhu heard this, Mahaprabhu was so happy. And he said that even if Lakshmi Devi were to beg, if she becomes bankrupt, if she were to actually beg at the houses of people, even then, you would not actually, in your house, there will be no dearth of wealth. Your house will always be in prosper. Your house will be always be in prosperity. Like that Mahaprabhu blessed Srivas Thakur. And the third personality who exhibited faith in Nityananda Prabhu is Shivananda Sen. So Shivananda Sen, he would arrange for the accommodation of the devotees. Once Nityananda Prabhu was coming to Bengal, there was some slight delay in getting the accommodation. That time Nityananda Prabhu said that Shivananda Sen's sons will die. And Shivananda Sen's wife heard this. She was so unhappy, she started crying. And Shivananda Sen pacified his wife. For the inconvenience we have caused to Nityananda Prabhu, we deserve that. We deserve this reaction. We don't mind being cursed by Nityananda Prabhu. And then he came to Nityananda Prabhu. And on top of the Nityananda Prabhu kicked Shivananda Sen. And Shivananda Sen, he just very humbly accepted it. And then he gave the accommodation for Nityananda Prabhu. And then he told Nityananda Prabhu that today I consider myself to be fortunate because you have accepted me as your servant. You have kicked me, you have punished me for my mistake. So my life, my birth, my family and my children, everyone has become perfect because you have accepted me as your servant. So here Shivananda Sen, he is exhibiting such level of faith. When Nityananda Prabhu exhibits whimsical behavior, just because there is some delay in getting the accommodation, Nityananda Prabhu says that the sons of Shivananda Sen will die. Like, what a reaction, actually. It will appear that actually this person is some kind of a sadist, or he's so impulsive, he behaves in such an instinctive way. You may think like that. But Shivananda Sen is actually is having faith in Nityananda Prabhu even in that situation. And then fourth incident, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells about the importance of faith in Nityananda Prabhu. Once some devotee asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Nityananda Prabhu is wearing so many costly golden ornaments. Why is he wearing such golden ornaments? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, please understand that the ornaments of which Nityananda Prabhu are wearing, not remembering the exact words, but what Mahaprabhu said is that the ornaments which he is wearing, they are the perfection of the Navavidha Bhakti. They are the perfection of devotional service. They represent the different limbs of Bhakti. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that way, he told the devotee how don't even actually doubt Nityananda Prabhu's activities, his appearance. And then we see the example of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Vrindavan Das Thakur also told, anybody who does not accept Nityananda Prabhu, I kick at that person's head with my feet. So Vrindavan Das Thakur also exhibits his transcendental attachment to Nityananda Prabhu by saying that one who does not accept Nityananda Prabhu, I kick at him. So therefore, faith becomes very crucial. In our life, there are so many things required for our existence. On the physical level, we need wealth, we need health, we have our family and relationships. All these are required on a physical level to have physical stability. But on a spiritual level, to practice spiritual life, to continue to practice spiritual life, what is important is to have the faith in the process. So the greatest loss in our life is not the loss of health, or is not the loss of wealth, it's not the loss of near and dear ones. The greatest loss in our life is the loss of faith. So many times we Like suppose somebody has a certain amount of money and he wants to increase that money. So he consults a certain investment consultant to find out which investment scheme would be good to invest that money to increase the money. And then he gives a different ideas. Okay, this investment scheme will give you this much percentage of the interest. Say only 3.5%, but there is very less risk factor. Well, this scheme will give 9.5% interest, but the risk factor is more. So in order to know, generally, sometimes there is a greater interest, but the risk factor is more. Some places there is a less interest, but the security is more. Less risk factor is less. But to know these things, we need to actually consult an investment consultant who tells the different schemes and the pros and cons. But do we actually think about our faith in the spiritual life? When we have a certain faith in spiritual life, we also need a consultant who can actually guide us how to increase that faith, how to actually protect that faith. Sometimes we invest in something and then we lose that money. We don't get interest also, and we lose that original money also. So what to speak of increasing the money? So similarly, we invest our faith in something, and we have to first know whether we are invested in the right place. And second is how to increase, maintain that faith, and how to increase that faith, how to protect that faith. So such consultants for the investment of faith and the increasement of faith, such consultants are the gurus, sadhus, and the devotees. Who can actually tell us how to actually increase that faith, how to protect that faith. So therefore, this faith in Nityananda Prabhu is important. We saw these four examples of Vrindavan Das Thakur, Kaviraj Goswami, Srivas Thakur, Shivananda Sen, and also we told that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself told that do not doubt the ornaments of Nityananda Prabhu, they are the perfection of devotional service. So I just spoke few words on this particular shloka, and then we discussed about Nityananda Prabhu. So I'll stop here if anybody has any questions or comments.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for the very, very beautiful class. It was very enlightening. Thank you, Prabhuji. And also the pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu was also very enlightening, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for covering so many, sharing so many stories. Hare Krishna. First, if devotees have any questions or comments, they can raise their hands or ask now. Yes.
Deepika Keni Mataji.
You can, yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you for the class.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Okay, Prabhuji, if considering only Prabhupada as the only spiritual master and disregarding the others, how do we establish Guru Shishya Parampara and how does one get initiated?
Yeah, that is essentially Diksha we take from a living person. When we say Prabhupada can be the only guru, there's nobody else qualified to be the guru. So I can directly become the disciple of Prabhupada. If a person can directly become the disciple of Prabhupada, then why can't I can say that, no, I will directly become the disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Or I can directly become the disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Or I can directly become the disciple of, I'll keep the photo of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and I'll take Diksha from him directly. Or I may say that I will keep the photo of Narada Muni, I will take Diksha from Narada Muni. Or let me become the disciple of Brahma directly. So there is no end to it actually. So this is a wrong idea. When we say that, oh, Prabhupada can be the only guru and nobody else can be the guru. So in one sense, it is like an insult to Prabhupada. It appears that, oh, this person is so much having faith in Prabhupada, this person is so glorifying Prabhupada, that Prabhupada can be the only guru. But actually, if we see, this person is insulting Prabhupada indirectly. Now, how it is an insult? It is saying that Prabhupada was such incompetent that he could not produce even one competent disciple who can be the guru. Essentially, we are saying Prabhupada is like an impotent spiritual master who couldn't make even one disciple who can become the guru in the future. Versus sometimes it may appear to be glorification of somebody, but within the glorification, there can be insult actually. It is actually an insult, but it appears to be a glorification. And sometimes there can be, one may be insulting or speaking some sharp words, but actually the internal intention is he is trying to glorify that person. Sometimes in very intimate exchanges, yesterday I was discussing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya, what they were just having a mock fighting, they were actually criticizing each other, but indirectly they are glorifying each other. So similarly, sometimes people say, oh, Prabhupada can be the only guru. Oh, it appears that they are glorifying Prabhupada, but actually it's indirectly an insult to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Sureshwar Prabhuji, you can ask your question.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam Prabhuji.
Prabhuji,
you said six sanghas, right? Prabhu, six sanghas of Vedas or six sanghas of
six one is Vedanga.
Vedanga. Yes. So one six is Vyakarana. Okay. One is Vyakarana, Chandas, Jyotishya, and then what else, Prabhu?
Shiksha. Shiksha means the science of phonetics, how to pronounce the different letters. Shiksha. Uh-huh. Chandas refers to the Vedic meters, like Bhagavad Gita shlokas are in Anushtup Chanda. Like the different types of chandas are there. Based on the chandas in one particular line, how many letters or how many matra should be there. So the chandas are like the railway track, like in which the trains move. Chandas are like the railway track in which the Vedic mantras are composed. So, Shiksha, Chandas. So, Shiksha and Chandas, they protect the words of the Vedas. They protect the Swarupa of the Vedas. And then Vyakarana and Nirukta. Vyakarana is the grammar. Nirukta is the Vedic dictionary. Vyakarana and Nirukta, they protect the meanings of the words in the Vedic literature. They protect the meanings. And then there is Kalpa and Jyotisha. So Kalpa Shastra talks about the procedures for performing the Vedic sacrifices. And Jyotisha Shastra talks about the right time in which those Vedic sacrifices have to be performed. Many times if you perform the right activity, but the time is improper, then the result can be different. So Jyotish Shastra explains how to find the right time to perform. So the Kalpa Shastra and Jyotish Shastra, they protect the different Vedic rituals, Vedic practices by telling us the right process and the right time. And Shiksha and Chandas, they protect the Swarupa of the Vedas. Vyakarana and Nirukta, they protect the meanings of the Vedas. Kalpa and Jyotisha, they protect the the particular procedure and the methodologies of the Vedic sacrifices.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for explanation. Prabhuji, Hare Krishna. So, Prabhuji, here in the verse, right, Prabhu? So, many times we have seen the word Aja is used for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like unborn, right? But here we are seeing Aja is referring to Lord Brahma. The verse,
Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, essentially, like, there are many words in Sanskrit, they have multiple meanings actually. They have multiple meanings. We have to understand the meaning based on the context. How to interpret which meaning will come here, that is based on the context. And that itself is a particular department in the Sanskrit, like the method of actually deciphering the meanings of sentences. Mimamsa Shastra is about it's a Vakya Shastra which explains which tells how to understand the meaning of a sentence. So, one of the way by which we can understand the meaning is by seeing the context. There are very, very standard methodologies are described in the different literatures. They explain how to actually understand the meaning. What is the Mukhya Vritti? What is the Gauna Vritti? Lakshana Vritti? Mukhya Vritti is the literal meaning. Gauna Vritti, Lakshana Vritti is the secondary meaning. So like that is the... So Aja, in this verse, it refers to Brahma.
Okay.
Ajaya also means unborn. When the soul is called as unborn. So Brahma is also called unborn because he was born from in the sense that he appeared in a lotus flower. In that sense also is called a Sanma.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Dandavat, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Madhuji, please. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dandavat, Prabhu. Beautiful class, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. So, Prabhuji, we are talking about the wealth. Like wealth is coming from the materialistic person's wealth is coming from Mother Durga, not from Mother Lakshmi. So, what about devotee's wealth, Prabhuji?
I mentioned that. Say in the case of a pure devotee, the examples like Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, their karma is completely eradicated. So for them, the wealth is directly coming from the wealth is directly given by the Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. So when we talk about devotees, what do you mean? Say common devotees or practicing devotees.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
In the case of practicing devotees, there is a hand of the external energy, there is a hand of the internal energy. Both are there. There is a hand of the, there is some element of karma, which is also a prarabdha karma, which every devotee is going through. So that karma element is also there. And sometimes the Krishna's antaranga shakti also plays a role in the life of a devotee in order to help him progress in the bhakti, which can be by either taking away the wealth or it can be by giving the wealth. So, it's like for example, somebody goes to buy a cell phone. Somebody goes to buy a cell phone in a particular shop. If he does not know anybody in the shop, then he has to pay the full price of the cell phone. The second person goes to the cell phone. He knows some manager or some worker in that shop. So because of that, he gets some 20% discount. And the third person goes to the cell phone shop. And he is a very close friend of the owner of all that particular, owner of the cell phone shop. Then he gets a complete discount. He doesn't have to pay anything.
Yeah.
So these three categories can be classified. The first category refers to somebody who is a materialist, who does not take the bhakti. So for him, the full karma is in store. He has to pay the full price. And for a pure devotee, which is the third category, pure devotee is like the, he's directly under the shelter of Krishna. It's like the person who knows, who's a very close friend of the owner of the shop. He doesn't have to pay anything. So pure devotee has no karma in store. So whatever is coming in his life, it is directly given by Krishna. The second category, that refers to sadhaka bhaktas, who started bhakti, but at the same time they are not pure, they are also struggling. So for them, Krishna gives sometimes some token of a reaction. So there is some hand of the Antaranga Shakti, Krishna's Antaranga Shakti is also there. At the same time, some karma is also there which he has to exhaust. Therefore, he will get some discount, but he'll have to save some price to buy the cell phone.
Yeah, yes, thank you, Prabhuji. Very nice example. So, Prabhuji, for what about the Ravana's wealth? You said like materialistic person's wealth is coming from Maya Devi. So he was offender of both for the mother Parvati and for the mother Sita. So how come he got the wealth on the first place?
Yeah, he got the wealth from the Durga only. He got the wealth. People worship the Devatas, they get the wealth. They get the wealth from the external energy of the Lord. But their wealth is temporary because they are averse to Lord Narayan. That wealth will go away in some point in time.
Okay, Prabhuji. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Today we were speaking about our faith to the Lord and Nityananda Prabhu. We are praying and each devotee is progressing depending upon his faith only. So faith means how to understand what is the level of our faith and how to improve our faith and how will be a fully surrendered soul's faith. Will he be like Jadabharata, totally not connected with anything, or he will use his intelligence? Who is having complete faith?
It is a step-by-step process. Advancement in bhakti is step-by-step process. Jadabharata is the highest stage of the evolution of faith. So the faith is defined as Krishna Bhakti Kaile Karma Sarva Karma Krita Haya. Simply by serving Krishna, everything else is accomplished. That is called as faith. Yatataror Mula Nishechena Tripyanti Tatskanda Bujopashaka. Simply by serving Krishna, all the devatas are pleased. Simply by watering the root of the tree, it will reach all the parts of the tree. That is called as a pure faith. That means serving Krishna, everything is accomplished. So one is when we talk about faith, one is that having the faith internally, and another is actually one's external exhibition, one's external dealings while living in the world. When a person is having that pure faith, complete faith in Krishna, it does not mean that a person will not perform any of the responsibilities, or it does not mean that a person, say, will not go to any Devata temple like that. Say, Pandavas had complete faith in Krishna. But Pandavas, they performed their, say, different duties. All the duties they performed very carefully. Arjuna worshipped Lord Shiva to get the Pashupatastra weapon. Like that, different Pandavas, they from the different Devatas, they got weapons. So does that mean that they were compromising with their faith? No, they were not compromising with their faith. So they had their complete faith in Krishna, but at the same time, while living in this world, they performed their dharmas dutifully while remembering Krishna. And then they even took the help of the devatas to get certain resources in the service of Krishna, which they can use in the service of Krishna. In that sense, they did not compromise their faith. And then at the appropriate time, they also showed, they also exhibited their total faith in a, they also exhibited their total faith by completely renouncing all the duties. After Krishna's disappearance, when they retired, at that time they manifested their that pure faith in a different way by by renouncing all the varnashram duties and exclusively focusing on Krishna. And before that also they were having the complete faith in Krishna, but they exhibited that complete faith in Krishna by their dutiful execution of the varnashram duties and while remembering Krishna. So in that way, the we have to understand the faith and the external manifestation of that faith. Hare Krishna. Jadabharat's case is also like
depend upon our external behavior or something. It is so yes, Prabhuji.
No, I said Jadabharat's example. Jadabharat's example is a complete, is the highest evolution of faith. Even when he was about to be killed by the dacoits, he was just standing peacefully. So Bhagavatam gives examples of very highest level of faith. So which are our aspiration. So we have to understand where we stand and how do we actually progress towards the highest level. Like just like a GPS system, you put the destination and also it records your current location and then it tells you how to go to the destination. So similarly in the spiritual life, we need to know what is the goal, and we have to be equally important is that where we stand currently. And then third is that what is the process to go towards that highest goal. So that process is of Navavidha Bhakti and the performance of the say Varnashram duties on the bodily level by following Nishkama Karma Yoga.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for that helpful answer. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. So I think I'll stop here.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, do you have time?
Okay, you can.
Yeah, just a few queries, Prabhuji, not exactly elaborate answers. First of all, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where do we read this story? I know South Indian story of Mahaprabhu, but where exactly can we read the chapter? Do you remember the chapter?
I think Madhya Leela, chapter 8 or 9, somewhere. 8 or
9. Okay, Prabhu.
South Indian Yatra is described in 2 chapters. Okay. It's 8 or 9 or 10, somewhere.
Okay, Prabhu. So, other thing, when saying that you were supporting it by a verse of Bhagavad Gita about the Shastras, how they are important. So, do you remember the verse number, Prabhu, Bhagavad Gita?
13th chapter, 4th verse, Rishibir Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
Just okay, 4 or 5, you can check that. Okay, Rishibir Bhagavad Gita. And then 18th chapter, Sankhye Kritante Proktani Siddhaye Sarvakarmana. It comes in somewhere 12th or 13th somewhere. The 5 factors of action, Krishna says that I'm going to describe the 5 factors of action according to the Shastra, according to the Vedanta. The second chapter, Nasato Vidyate Bhavo 2.17-18 somewhere there.
Okay, bro. And the last thing, you said 6 Vedangas. Did I hear that correct? So, so what are those, Prabhu? I heard it for the first time, so I would.
6 Vedangas I mentioned, Chandas and Shiksha. Shiksha is the science of phonetics. Chandas is talks about the different Vedic meters, Shiksha and Chandas, and Vyakarana is the grammar, and then fourth is Nirukta, dictionary, the meanings of the certain different words, the different special meanings of the different words used in the Sanskrit literature. And then Kalpa. Kalpa refers to, talks about the process of methodology of executing the Vedic rituals. And Jyotisha refers to the time in which the rituals are can be executed. So these six are the Vedangas. They are compared to the different limbs of the Veda Purusha. Vyakarana is compared to the face of the Veda Purusha. Shiksha is compared, Chandas is compared to the nostril of the Veda Purusha, and 1 minute. Yeah. So the six Vedangas. So Chandas are compared to the feet of the Veda Purusha, and Kalpa is compared to the hand of the Veda Purusha, and Jyotisha is compared to the eyes of the Veda Purusha, and Nirukta is compared to the ears of the Veda Purusha, and Shiksha is compared to the nostril of the Veda Purusha, and Vyakarana is the face of the Veda Purusha. So in this way, this just like the different limbs of the body, they serve the person body. Similarly, the six Vedangas, they serve the body of the Vedic literature. They serve the Veda Purusha. They serve the body of the Vedic literature to understand the meaning and application.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna. Thank you. And sorry for taking your extra time, but very grateful. Hare Krishna. Dhanyavad Pranam.
Hare.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Mataji. So, thank you, Prabhuji, for giving your valuable time and association. If there are no questions or comments, we'll end the call here. Thank you once again from Anchal Kalpataru Vestya Kripa Sindhu Kevacha Patita Nam Vibhyo Mahakoti Bhai Bhagavad. Thank you, Prabhuji. Please give your.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, Radhe, Radhe.
Radhe, Radhe.
Radhe, Radhe.
Radhe, Radhe.